as listeners may remember, I used to work with the School of Social Work on a temporary basis, and I met a ton of amazing people over there. And I will say Tanya was one of the coolest. This is Tanya Rhodes Smith, who is director of the Nancy A. Humphreys Institute for Political Social Work, which I think is a hidden gem here at UConn. She's also an instructor in residence in the School of Social Work's Policy Practice Concentration. And as we are recording and as this airs, we are coming off of the 2022 Campaign School for Social Workers, which is an amazing annual program that has trained more than 2,000, and I'm sure that number's probably grown since you've written that on your website, Tanya, more than 2,000 social workers to run for office and lead campaigns. Welcome, Tanya, to UConn 360.
Julie, hi, Tom. So nice to be here. I'm also, in addition to my role in Hartford, I'm also a very proud alum. My husband and I
yes.
go to UConn.
Yes, excellent. So for those of us who don't know, including me, what is political social work?
Maybe I should step back and say a little bit about Nancy Humphreys, who coined the term because she founded the Institute in 1994, 26 years ago, and was really, we call her the we used to tease her, but we called her the mother of political social work because she really thought about social work as a political profession and conceptualized this idea that not only could social workers work with individuals and families, but that we were perfectly trained to be working in political settings. So inside politics, as elected officials, as staff for elected officials, as advocates shaping change from the outside. So all of the places where policy is formed, no one being more informed than social workers in terms of how policy impacts individuals and communities. So she conceptualized it as a practice specialty, and we've actually now think more about political social work being something that all social workers can do, because inherently, social work is a political profession. It really is grounded in that idea of the individual in the environment, and so you can't fix complex problems that individuals face without also addressing the issues that they face in their environment and in their communities and beyond.
There's a lot of ways that we could go with that. I was going to ask you why it's important for social workers to be involved in the political system and in shaping policy. And you did sort of start to touch on that, but maybe you can expand on that a little bit.
Sure. I think in a basic sense, social workers see problems. You know, in order to fix a problem, you have to be up close to a problem, right? And really understand it. So we have a lot of social workers who are experts on the problems that their communities face, and they don't always have the time or training to bring what they know, that expertise, to the political process. So then we have some social workers who really specialize in the political process, in, you know, understanding how legislation is passed, understanding how policy is formed, community organizers who build political power, you know, all those ways that we shape the political process, we do so as a continuum. So some will do a little and collaborate with others. Others will spend a lot of time in the political process and bring both social workers and the communities we serve into the political process. That's how we work. At the Humphreys Institute, we really think a lot about how we increase that political participation. What do people need to know to be politically active? What kind of power do we need to be building within communities so that they have the power to shape their communities? So that's sort of the space that we're in.
There are a lot of different ways that anyone, and social workers specifically, can be involved in politics. And I know when I was working with the school, you know, there were stories we did about even just getting students to write letters to the editor about the issues and about the public acts and things that were being considered by the legislature. But obviously, one of the most high profile ways for social workers to be involved is to actually be elected to office or to run campaigns. And as I mentioned earlier, the Campaign School, which has been running for several years now, was just this past weekend and was in person for the first time in a few years. So how did that go? And tell us a little bit more about what that is and what that aims to do.
I'd love to. So I am still so excited about what happened last weekend. We had 120 students and faculty and advocates come from 12 different states and 28 different schools and two different countries to be in person. I know. And I didn't realize how much I missed connecting with people one-on-one until I walked into this room. And we call it the Campaign School for Social Workers. And a couple of things about that. One is that we really don't spend a lot of time on partisan politics. It's a nonpartisan training, but we do speak from social work's values and our code of ethics, because social workers do have a very strong code of ethics that really is like a superpower when you are dealing in politics. You know, it will navigate you through all those sticky situations and conflicts that you would need to wrestle with in politics. So, you know, it's, again, it's one of those reasons why we think social workers are so well situated. Running for office for most people is a long runway. And so one of the things that we spend a lot of time doing is, yes, we give them the fundamentals of how to run a campaign and why they are qualified. It's sort of the skills, the competence, and the confidence, you know, that we are all qualified to run for office and to participate in politics. So it was great. And so we spend a lot of time on leadership. And again, running for office is a long runway for a lot of people. And the first step is to realize that you are a leader and that you belong in politics, and that politics can make you feel like an outsider. It has a way of making you feel small, but that you shouldn't feel small, that our democracy is stronger when we are all involved.
It sounds great. And being in person must have been fantastic too, for the first time in a couple of years.
Oh, and the only funny part was that, you know, the mask mandate dropped the night before. So we were all a little mask awkward together, but we did it. And it was really special because, you know, politics is all about relationships too. So being in person it filled my bucket, and I know it filled others too. So it was a very special weekend.
When I was a reporter in North Carolina, a colleague and I did a series of stories on the child welfare system there. And some of our best and most important sources were social workers, like county level social workers, because not only did they have the sort of direct experience with individuals, but they had a really good sense of the kind of broader sort of structural problems and challenges. And when we talked to them, we heard over and over again, they would say, no one's ever asked us about this before. How do we get policymakers to recognize that social workers are not just sort of direct providers of service, but also kind of experts in policy?
You know, it's really interesting, and it's one of the hidden or maybe not recognized gems of the UConn School of Social Work, is that we have hundreds of social workers in our state that have gone through our training and our programs that are working for our congressional delegation. We have 6 social workers who are elected at the state legislature. We've got social workers that run for mayor or selectman in our state. We've got social workers who lead policy and agencies. We've got lobbyists who are social workers. I mean, all across the spectrum of politics, and certainly embedded into all kinds of social service agencies. So, and that is different. I mean, of all the 50 states, I think Connecticut should be so proud, and we are recognized as really having this full continuum of the power of social work. But interesting you mentioned North Carolina, because we go on the road at least once a year in the last 5 years. And at the end of the month, we'll be at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, training social workers and students in North Carolina how to bring their expertise to the political process. So we're really excited about that.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That is great. You were talking about all the politicians. I wrote down to ask you, are there any famous politicians that people might know who are social workers? Or, you
Julie,
know, I don't want to put you on the spot, but.
I love this question. Actually, we have this long legacy of political social workers. The very first woman elected to any national legislature, Jeanette Rankin, she was the first woman elected to Congress in 1917. The first female cabinet member, Frances Perkins, who served under FDR and was one of the architects in shaping, you know, the New Deal and a lot of our worker safety standards and Social Security and all those things. Actually, Harry Hopkins, also in that administration, was a social worker. Whitney Young was a social worker. Dorothy Height was a social worker. And that's just to name a few. We stand on the shoulders of some greats.
You mentioned getting involved, and that's something that you work on, like in the policy school. That seems to be a challenge across the system in the U.S. you know, the voter participation rates are low, but also I think sort of engagement is low. Why do you think that is? And what are some effective strategies to kind of counteract that?
I completely agree. So the first thing that we examine at the Institute is really voting as a social determinant of health and a political determinant of health. And when you look at voter participation, you know, voting is also about relationships and trust in government and beyond. And I would say that most people, we think voting is so easy, but the act of voting and figuring out who represents you and who will serve in your interest is actually not that easy. Historically, our system of getting people elected ignores non-voters. So many, many people in America are not being asked, or they're being asked at the presidential election or when there's a high profile, and not being asked when it's a local election or a state election. So one of the things that we were excited to share at the campaign school, and we are working on this as a national call to action within our profession, is the power of three. So we gave social workers who attended, and we will give one to all of our students at the School of Social Work, because actually our first year students registered more than 500 people to vote last semester. So we give them a lanyard, because technology sort of helps that, and have them register and engage three people to vote. And we do that because, one, it gives a social worker who's doing it for the first time the opportunity to engage someone in politics and ask them and hear their concerns about maybe it's their community or maybe it's why they choose to vote or not vote. The bottom line is that we know that also the role of policies like felony disenfranchisement, you know, those kinds of things that bring people out of civic engagement actually have this ripple effect into communities, families and communities. That's sort of the foundation of civic engagement. And when you take people out and you have communities that have been disproportionately affected by arrest rates and incarceration, we also see the lowest rates of civic participation. And that's, you know, that's no surprise. And so we've been also working to sort of overturn those laws and grounded in the research, because the practice of voting, the act of voting, is actually been shown to be good for people and good for communities. Communities that vote in higher rates have significantly better outcomes. And there's some research to show that the practice is even good for individuals.
I know, especially in the most recent presidential election, Stacey Abrams and the Fight Fair campaign and everything, that was really kind of what people were focused on as getting people to vote and voter mobilization. But I know organizations like yours and the Hartford Power Voting Corps that is run through the Humphreys Institute and by students in the School of Social Work and organizations like it around the country get out kind of in simple, small ways. So I know they were at one of the most popular election sites in Hartford helping, you know, handing out coffee and donuts to people waiting in long lines and just making sure people were at the right place, which, you know, some of us might think, how could you not know? But there's a lot of barriers to being able to vote.
Yes. And maybe I'll start there, because when you think about voting, you know, a lot of us who, if you live in a suburb and you've only ever driven up to your polling place and cast your ballot and you were in and out in 5 minutes and you have a job that might allow you to do that, you know, voting can seem very, very easy. But when you have kids and you are taking a bus or you don't have a car or you are working long hours or you don't have flexible hours, voting can be really difficult. And in fact, elections are very local and they're run by local resources. So again, when we think about when elections go wrong, unfortunately, we've had some very big problems in Bridgeport. One year, they ran out of ballots in the 2010 election. In New Haven last year, or in 2020, New Haven, the mail didn't deliver the absentee ballots. So there was a lot of people and a lot of students trying to register and vote in the same day that were turned away. You know, so voting can be really more complicated. And it was 2 years ago in the 2020 election that you're referencing, Julie, mm-hmm. that the student interns at the Humphreys Institute, they set up a table at Grace Lutheran Church in Hartford, knowing that that was a very, very popular voting site. And the line for that election was up in the cold, was up to 2 hours long at certain points. And so we were handing out hot drinks and food and activities for kids because parents were holding their kids' hands. I mean, it was not great. But then we were also able to call the election hotline and say, hey, this line is too long. You need more workers here. And we got an immediate response. So it's both sometimes being there as sort of that election protection hat and then also, you know, helping people navigate the process.
And that's kind of where the social work piece comes in, the knowing how to relate on that one-to-one level and do these small things that just overcome these barriers much more easily.
Yes. And again, if you're just trying to get someone to vote for one time, we don't see the needle being moved. This is really long-term work in terms of engaging people on their fundamental right to vote and participating in shaping their communities. So that's the voter engagement side of what we do. And then we also use the training to say, democracy is stronger when we have full participation. You know, who's missing from the room? Who's missing from campaigns? Who's missing from town committees? Who's missing from advocacy efforts? But social workers are always looking around the room to say who should be in this circle of power or in this conversation?
Well, I guess sort of kind of wrapping up, because of all the stuff that I've learned, I wonder, when you talk to people, do you hear a lot of common misconceptions about social workers? Is there anything that stands out? Like people don't realize the breadth of things that social workers do?
We all joke. We all have party, you know, stories where it just stops a conversation. Oh, you help people, you know, which is true. But yes, I would say most people don't think about social workers as being political. They think more about the important work that they're doing in schools and in agencies and beyond. And this is just building on all of it. It's really trying to say we are accessing the full power of our profession when we make sure that we're doing the full continuum of care and service in communities.
And some of that is so great. Just, I mean, the election work that you mentioned, you know, when I moved back to Connecticut from other states, I was shocked because I didn't realize that, you know, there's no early voting here. In other states, sometimes 6 weeks, and that affords many more opportunities to schedule a time to vote. But here it really is like, you know, unless you get an absentee ballot, like, and if it's snowing that day, if it's raining that day, if there's a 2-hour wait, you're waiting. And yeah, so the barriers to voting are, I think, higher than a lot of people think.
You know what's fascinating, and there was a public hearing last week. All of our macro students too. We also use this term called macro social work for students who are working really in systems, our community organizing and policy students, and they all testify at the legislature as part of an assignment in their political advocacy class. And there was a public hearing last Friday on absentee voting, and the one thing that is really important that we share is that states that make voting easier, so voting is different in all 50 states. So states that make voting easier by passing policies like same-day voter registration or early voting or no excuse absentee ballots and all of those ways, they actually have better health outcomes on a variety of measures. So again, this idea that political participation and particularly voting is good for people, it's good for communities, and it's good for democracy.
That's fascinating. That's amazing. What an impact. You all can learn more about School of Social Work's Humphreys Institute at ssw.ucon.edu. And thank you so much, Tanya.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.